say student of the game. Mm-hmm. That's Draymond Green. You're enamored about who is this guy that's talking all of this trash. What people don't understand is fundamentally, he is so sound. He understands how to defend every position.
Rick Bucher. This is the thing that gets me that I don't think people appreciate about Draymond is they see the passion and they don't recognize how intelligent he is and how smart his game is. He is beating guys because he understands the game.
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the 37th episode. Can you believe it, BJ? 37 episodes. All
unbelievable.
Of them dynamite, but this is going to be the 37th. It's going right to the top of the charts. It's the episode of the BJ and Bucher podcast, Four Quarters of Madness. He's BJ Armstrong. I almost said BJ Bucher. He's BJ Armstrong. I'm Rick Bucher. I know we're almost, it's Rick Armstrong and BJ Bucher. We're just going to change. We're going to change up. It's like when you own a dog, you know, the dog starts to look like the owner. It's symbiotic relationship here. But no, we
Rick Armstrong. I like the sound of that.
That is a good. That is a good name. You know, there was a couple of guys in the league. Joe Prunty, the assistant coach with the Milwaukee Bucks, was trying to convince me that I should name my son Duke because Duke Bucher. He said, "You know, he's going to be a stud."
Oh, I like that too.
Duke Bucher.
I like that.
Yeah, I couldn't sell it to the wifey. She didn't go for it. So. I tried to throw Chauncey out there too. She definitely didn't go for that. I thought that was just whack. Anyway, we have four quarters of madness. Our special guest. In fact, the interview was so good that it is going to take up. Normally, it's just the fourth quarter, but Damian Lillard, star. I have to say, he's a star. I can't call him an all-star because he's never been an all-star. Star with the Portland Trail Blazers, and we talk about the fact that he's never gotten that all-star recognition. He's also never asked for any additional help in Portland. I admire a lot about Damian. And I also made mention of the fact that my co-host is also a aspiring hip-hop artist. And as we know, Damian is an accomplished, Dame Dollar is an accomplished hip-hop artist. So BJ, he's going to have some advice for you on how you approach the business if you decide to really go for it.
Well, you got to really love this young man's passion, the way he approaches his profession on the court, and that he has interest. And, you know, as an MC, he's a very responsible artist in what he says and the words and the craft. So, you know, our hats go off to him. I salute him for what he's doing and the things he's doing in the community. You know, he's Oakland through and through. And I really respect how he's conducting himself as a young man. And, you know, I think I speak for both of us here, Rick, is, you know, we're rooting for him and the way he's gone out and really performed at the highest level in this league, and continued success to him as he moves on through his career.
I admire what he's done and how he's done it. But we want to start with, in the first quarter, our discussion on another point guard, and that's Rajon Rondo, who has had a tumultuous last few years as a career, from Dallas to Sacramento, wound up in Chicago this year, was out of the rotation at certain points, starting at certain points, defending the young guys. And that's really where I think that season turned, where Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler were critical of the young guys. Rajon Rondo stood up for the young guys on that team, spoke out on their behalf, and that seemed to galvanize that team. And then fast forward to the playoffs, and Rajon Rondo has a outstanding performance in game two. The Bulls go up 2-0 in that series. And then afterward, we find out that he had fractured a thumb in the course of that game and had to miss the rest of the series. And the Celtics went on to win the series 4-2. Now, I believe that the Boston Celtics won that series not just because Rajon Rondo was out, because Brad Stevens made some terrific coaching maneuvers in spacing the floor by pulling Al Horford out to the three-point line, starting Gerald Green and playing a faster lineup. But nonetheless, Rondo's impact on that team was so profound that now we're hearing that some of the players, particularly the young players, want to see Rondo back on that team next year. Now, BJ, I heard that, you know, this was a little bit of a one-year experiment. The Bulls are still committed to moving Jimmy Butler. That might convince Dwayne Wade to opt out of his deal because he said he came to Chicago to play with Jimmy. So when you, if you were a one-time executive with the Chicago Bulls, when you look at what they did this year, Robin Lopez and all the pieces that they have, what direction would you take this franchise based on the eighth seed and the assets that they have?
Well, I'm going to go back from the beginning. Last offseason, they traded Derrick Rose, which, you know, I think many around the league would agree that that was a clear signal that they were moving in a direction where they were rebuilding. But certainly, I think we can call it a retooling. And then out of nowhere, Rick, I remember you and I talking about this. Dwayne Wade signs with the Bulls.
For $22 million a year, like $45 million two-year deal.
I didn't get it then.
Yeah.
I don't get it now. You have, you know, good young players. Seemed like this was the right opportunity for them to get into the draft. I think this is going to be a terrific draft, especially at the top of the draft, I think over the next 2 years. So for them to sign Dwayne Wade, I didn't get it. And I don't understand what they were doing. But again, maybe the playoffs suddenly, or a player like Dwayne Wade, as they sold it, was he was going to help Jimmy Butler with his leadership.
Mm.
You know, there was some bickering that, you know, possibility that there was something going on between Fred Hoiberg and Jimmy Butler a year ago, and that Dwayne Wade was going to be the calming effect that was going to help him move the franchise in the right direction. Suddenly, a year later, Rondo emerges as the leader of the team.
Right. How about that? But how profound is that, that Rajon Rondo, who had been vilified in Sacramento, vilified in Dallas, and he comes in. I give Brad Stevens and some of the adjustments that he made the lion's share of the credit. The difference in the young guys and the way they played with Rondo and the way they played with Butler, I don't know that we would have noticed it as starkly if it wasn't in a playoff series where you had one game in one way or two games one way and then four games the other way, and and Jimmy had played point guard at times over the course of the season. I mean, he initiated the offense at times, but it was such a stark difference in just the energy of the team.
Well, Rajon Rondo, you know, he is a competitor. And I think it takes a unique personality to coach him. Certainly, he's shown that he can play in big moments. So it wasn't like he hasn't been there, done that. It's just a matter of him fitting in and finding the right place for him. And I was very happy for him to see how he emerged this year as a leader of a team.
No doubt. Speaking of leadership, before we leave the first quarter, among the teams that were knocked out in the first round, whose star impressed you and made you believe that this is just the beginning for this guy? He might not have gotten out of the first round this time, but the future is bright, and that you expect, whether it's because the team around him or just because of his individual play, we're going to see that guy back in the postseason next year, and he's going to be bigger and better than ever.
Well, I have this weird thing. I don't like to mispronounce people's name, but the Greek kid in Milwaukee.
Can I do it for you?
Yes.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis is a player that is a problem in this league, and he's going to be a problem for many years to come. I think this kid is really putting together his game in a way, and you're seeing him evolve. You're seeing the future of basketball when you watch him. He just does things that you just marvel at. And sometime the way he plays, I'm so impressed with what he does athletically and physically that you forget that this kid knows how to play as well.
Yes.
And when I say he knows how to play mentally, he has a high basketball IQ.
Yes.
And I just think at some point here, the kid is going to be unguardable because he is a major problem. He competes. You can't underestimate a player that shows up every night and competes. And I remember watching Michael Jordan play against the Boston Celtics when they had the big three. And Michael Jordan had a game and he had like 60-something points. They lose the series. But his level of competition was like, wow. Giannis in game six was down. What were they down? 25 points?
Yeah, at least.
It was easy for him. It was easy at that point for him to throw in the towel. Right. It was easy. He had every reason. Things weren't going right for that team. They've lost some tough games at home. Then they go up to Toronto. Rick, he found a way to continue to stay engaged as a young player. And that is so, so difficult. You can just tell, Rick, at some point, he's going to put this all together. And when you have these tough losses, that's going to burn inside of him. And he's going to appreciate how difficult it is to win. And I think this kid is just going to be terrific once he does it.
Good call. Let's go on to the second quarter. The topic that I want to hit with you is something that you and I talked a little bit about on NBA radio not too long ago. It involves the Indiana Pacers and Paul George. We talked about the fact that the reports out there that Larry Bird, the legend, is going to step down. And I can't help but feel that some of that is a frustration on some level. What's contributing to that is the frustration that his superstar, Paul George, has spoken openly about his desire to play back in L.A. With the Lakers in the midst of this team struggling to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. In any event, let's move forward because we had Magic Johnson on one of the late night talk shows and they were asking him about tampering. And he said, I can't, well, I'm not supposed to tamper, but, you know, or they said, well, what if you run into Paul George? You know, can you say hello? And he said, yeah, I can say hello, but I can't talk to him about coming to the Lakers. You know, I could wink and I could, and it was funny bit. But the fact of the matter is, it's still the question of, was he tampering? Because he was making it clear the Lakers would be interested in Paul George. So I ask you, Lakers have are going to have a high draft pick in this draft. There's some tremendous talent. Josh Jackson, Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Malik Monk, any number of guys. And they have a good chance of getting one of them. Lonzo Ball's dad, LeVar, has already said he wants to see Lonzo playing as a Laker. If you are the Lakers and you could get Paul George, but it would cost you, and you wanted to get him right now, but it would cost you that first round pick, would you be willing to do it? Why?
The players that I see that you mentioned, first of all, I think these are very talented players in this year's draft, especially at the top. I think there are some superstars in this, and I think there is a player who stands above all when it comes to that. I think there is some players here that you have to take a serious look that you can build a franchise around because it doesn't come around that often. Now, with Paul George, I'm going to humble myself as an executive. Why do I think I know something that they don't? Larry Bird knows basketball. Larry Bird would know his players and his organization better than I would looking from afar. So if I think Larry Bird is telling us something right now.
By stepping down?
By stepping down.
So in other words, if he thought that Paul George could lead his team to a championship, he'd be sticking around to try to make that happen.
I think that's what Larry Bird is saying. Now, I think Paul George is a terrific talent. I think he's an exceptional player. Clearly he can score. He can do a lot of different things. But when you talk about carrying a franchise, that's a whole different ballgame. And I'm not sure how many players are actually ready to do that. They have the talent to do it. But when you talk about carrying that, I think that's a totally different conversation.
But that's why I would look at Bird in hand, because Paul George has demonstrated that he can at least carry a team to the playoffs.
Fair, right? Fair enough.
And has demonstrated that he can be a dominant player in the NBA.
Fair enough.
For all the talent and all of the hype surrounding this draft, even Josh Jackson, who is probably the most, at least the people that I talk to in the league, say he's the most ready-made. He's the most sure thing as far as a guy who you can... He's going to be good. He's going to be good. He has the most complete game.
Right.
So, but even that, like, I don't know. Can he be the leader of an NBA franchise? I don't know that.
Well, when you look at the salary that Paul George will command, and all we're saying is a first round playoff appearance. the great players that I've ever worked with or represented, the Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose made the playoffs in his first year in the NBA and took the Celtics to 7 games on a rookie contract. Right. I would rather take my chances with that than having to pay a player a max salary to make a first-round appearance. When you start talking about paying a player max salary, I'm asking him to do more than play. I'm asking him to lead. I'm asking him to have an invested interest, not only in how we play, but to the team and lead this team. I think that takes some time. And right now, I just believe that Larry Bird is trying to tell us something. And it's no knock against Paul George. Maybe he does need a change. Maybe he goes out to the Lakers and next year I get on and say, hey, I made a mistake. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I look at that Indiana Pacer team. I like the kid Turner. I like Monte Ellis. Okay. I like Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague's an all-star for crying out loud. So I would hope that Paul George and his representatives would look at that because I like that Indiana team. And if the grass isn't always greener on the other side. But that's just me talking as a 50-year-old guy and on the podcast. And I would hope he would maybe take that into consideration.
Well, being a 50-year-old guy, you know, you need your rest on occasion. So it's time for the halftime entertainment. Shane, our producer, please take it away.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
All right, guys, today's halftime break on the BJ and Bucher podcast is brought to you by Common, featuring Bilal, and this is their song, The Sixth Sense. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's Common Sense, the DJ premiere. We gonna help y'all see clear. It's real hip-hop music from the soul, y'all. Yeah, check it. Yeah. The perseverance of a rebel, I drop heavier levels, it's unseen or heard. A king with words, can't knock the hustle, but I've seen street dreams deferred. Dark spots in my mind where the scene occurred. Some say I'm too deep, I'm in too deep with sleep. Through me, Muhammad will forever speak Greek. Brothers with handshakes on ghetto landscapes, where a man is determined by how much a man makes. Cop cognacs and spit old raps with young cats with cigarettes in the air. They appear under the FUBU is a guru that's untapped. Wanna be in the rat race but ain't ran one lap. Ran so far from the streets that you can't come back. You tripping with nowhere to unpack. Forgot that.
Rap real, something you feel.
And you know, yes you know.
This is rap real, something you feel.
And you know, yes you know.
This is rap real, something you feel.
A 2-inch glass, some A-Rabs, I order fries. Inspiration when I write, I see my daughter's eyes. I'm the truth, across the table from corporate lies. Immortalized by the realness I bring to it. If revolution had a movie, I'd be theme music. My music can either fight or dream to it. My life is one big rhyme, I tried to scheme through it. Through my shell, never knew what the divine would bring through it. I'd be lying if I said I didn't want millions. More than money saved, I want to save children. Dealing with alcoholism and Afrocentricity. A complex man drawn off of simplicity. Reality is frisking me. This industry will make you lose intensity. The common sense in me remembers the basement. I'm Morpheus in this hip-hop matrix, exposing fake shit.
And you know, yes you know.
This is rap for real, don't you feel.
And you know, yes you know.
This is rap for the black people.
I hope you enjoyed the halftime entertainment. Because we have a special guest in Damian Lillard, and the interview was so fantastic, we are going to bypass our normal third quarter, which is our trivia challenge. I mean, BJ is a 50-year-old guy, and he's lost about 6 times in a row. So I don't want him to take another L. I want him to take a W by being able to hear the full breadth of my conversation with Damian, which included some talk about the hip-hop business, how he has been successful, what has driven him, and what might make Had To, a.k.a. Ooh. BJ Armstrong, successful as well. Here's the conversation. Please enjoy. Welcome to the BJ and Bucher podcast. We're now joined by a very special guest, Damian Lillard, point guard for the Portland Trail Blazers. And you may not know this, but my co-host, BJ Armstrong, considers himself a little bit of a hip-hop artist himself.
Yeah.
Has a name, Had To. Had To is his artist name. So for somebody who's just breaking in or just starting to try to spit some lyrics, any advice since you are now accomplished?
I think the first thing is to make your name mean something.
Okay.
I think your name is a big part of it, you know, because if you just make up any random name, then when that question comes up, why are you named this? You want to be able to have something behind it, something that people can respect.
Yeah.
And also something that means something to you. And I think that's a start. But then when it's music, I think to just be genuine, you know, and make your music authentic and real instead of kind of riding the wave of you know, what's hot at the time. You got to make music that's true to you, and I think that's the kind of music that's everlasting instead of, you know, the music that just comes and goes, you know, just music for the time.
Right. Did it take you a while to find your voice and to find that? Is that something that evolved?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I didn't know what I wanted to say or what, you know, what kind of artist I wanted to be, but I just didn't. It took me a while to learn how to rhyme and be clever in the rhymes and changing up the rhyme patterns. So it was like a lot of my songs that I did like in high school and beginning of college, I was just lying a lot. Like, I got this money and I got this chain, and I was just saying a lot of stuff. And it was like, it was cool rhymes, but it wasn't true to who I was or what was really going on.
Huh.
And I think once I got older and matured and, you know, it became corny to me. Like, the stuff that I had written and heard of myself in the past, I was like, man, that's corny. I can't believe I was, like, actually saying this stuff.
Right.
And I started to tell my real story, and I was proud to be able to put words together and actually tell a true story and tell my real story. And that's when, like, I noticed my brother was like, oh, I like this, because he could hear my stuff, and he'd be like, oh, I know what you're talking about. And then I let my cousins hear it, and they could hear it and they knew what I was talking about. Then my dad would hear it and he knew that I was telling the truth. And that, once I saw that, that was the difference that made them really like, oh, he really getting better. When they heard the truth in it and it was like real rhymes and it was good bars, then I was like, man, I really started to enjoy the fact that I'm sharing something that's real and something that people can relate to and people could point to. And for example, I got a song on my album called Wasatch Front. That's about just my experience in Utah in college.
Yeah.
And like the guy that I worked out with in college, my assistant coach Phil Beckman, he's not a big hip hop fan, but he listened to that song all the time and he texted me like, this song give me the chills because he listened to it and he was there for that stuff.
Right.
So he knows that like this is real. And he's listening to that song all the time because he can appreciate it and that'll never go away because those memories will never go away. And that's the kind of music that I learned is best for me.
Sure.
When I can have that type of impact.
Was it a process of like being real, like opening up and letting, because you're letting people inside,
yeah,
you know, and sometimes we don't always want to do that, right?
Because
you don't know how people are going to react or if it's going to be received the right way.
Exactly. And I think that's the difference in Drake, an artist like Drake and a lot of other artists is the vulnerability. You know, he makes himself vulnerable. He doesn't mind people saying, oh, he's soft. Or he was in love with this woman, you know, and everybody's, you know, dated her. You know, he opens up and tells the truth about it. So when people listen to it, regardless if they want to admit it or not, they like the music because they're like, man, I've been in that type of situation.
Yeah.
He's telling the truth right there. And once you get to the point where you're comfortable enough to do it, I think that's when your music is most genuine. And that's when, regardless if people want to clown you about it or not, when they hear it, they're going to be like, man, that's really real, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Kendrick Lamar got a song called You Ain't Gotta Lie. And in the hook, he say, you ain't gotta lie to kick it. You ain't gotta lie. And that's a simple hook, but it's like, the stuff that he's saying people would lie about and the stuff they do is like, man, people really do that.
And they do that
just to kind of get along and be in the group or whatever, you know, and it's stuff like that that makes Kendrick Lamar Kendrick Lamar.
It's good stuff. You're in the midst of playoff series with the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
Got to ask you about Jusuf Nurkić coming on board and the change there. Why did he
and obviously hasn't played in the series. We don't know what's going to happen there. Why did he fit so instantly? Why was that such a catalyst for you guys making the playoffs?
I think just because, first of all, everybody recognized right away that he was a good teammate, a genuinely good teammate.
What do you mean by that? Like, what makes a good teammate?
Like, he really cared about winning. Like, when he came here and he was starting, he realized, like, oh, these, you know, there's a lot of guys on this, good guys on this team. You know, they care about each other. You can tell by our relationships to each other. And his first couple of games, if it wasn't going well for him, he didn't get in his own situation and pout and all that. He was still cheering, off the bench cheering, and still interacting. And that was the first thing I noticed, because he's young. It's easy for him to get to a new team, miss a couple shots. You don't get the ball a few times and to start pouting and get into your own deal. And he didn't do that. And I was like, okay, he really cares about the team. You know, in one game, he wasn't playing well at all, but we were winning the game. And he's in the huddle like, man, we need this game. We need this game. You know, we want to make the playoffs. So that's when we noticed he was a good teammate. But I think that's the thing that's really set in with us that made us really, really embrace him. But I think on the floor, just the balance, you know, being able to throw the ball on the block and he can score on the block, a good playmaker from the block, just a rim protector on the defensive end, a huge body on both ends, taking up that space in the paint, and a competitor. It was something that we didn't have. And, you know, it made us a much better team.
Big picture, you, like, struggled the beginning of this year for this team collectively. The lack of accolades that you've received personally in spite of the success that this team has had. And yet, while you've made mention of it, I've never heard you complain. I've never heard you go out and say, you know, we need this, or I don't have this, or, like, you've never done that, and you've been consistent in that. Where does that come from? Because I got to think, there are times where you want to, like, how have you been able to stay consistent in not putting it on anything outside of yourself?
Because that's not what I come from. I grew up and I had cousins that weren't good at basketball and weren't good at football or weren't good at baseball. We played all these sports against other kids together in our neighborhood. For example, this is an example. We played all these sports against other families. Like, in my neighborhood, it was a lot of big families. My cousins and me would play against other people and their cousins in baseball, basketball, football. And I could never, ever be like, man, we need him instead of my cousin right here. You know what I mean? Like, think about replacing one of my cousins with somebody else, regardless of how good they are. This is who I'm rolling with.
Right.
And that's how I feel about my teammates. You know, it would be a slap in my teammates' face just like it is to my cousins if I'm saying, oh, we need this, or we need, like, who am I to say that? You know, I make mistakes. I have bad games. I ain't perfect. So, you know, I'm not going to show up every day with these dudes and work with them and, you know, share a locker room with them and go out there and win and lose with these guys and travel on a plane with these guys and then say, I need something better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like if I'm doing my job and I empower them and raise their level of confidence, you know, Villanova won a national championship, and nobody knew nothing about them coming into that season. They had each other, and I think that's the power of a team can get anything done. You know, when you have other teams that aren't as strong as that team is together, and that's how my belief system is, and has always been.
I was just going to say, you believe in the power of togetherness, and that can overcome whatever it might say on paper.
Exactly.
You are
exactly.
Where did you first experience that or see that made you believe that is possible?
With the Oakland Rebels. You know, I joined the Rebels in the fifth grade. Fifth grade, we was the best team around, except the Soldiers was always better than us. And sixth grade, we was the best team. The Soldiers was always better than us. And then we had, like, from seventh grade to like 10th grade, where we just like struggled. Everybody got bigger, everybody was dunking, there was more athletic. And we were smaller. And we worked real hard, but we would get to the summer and we didn't win a lot of games all the time, like from that seventh grade to like 10th grade. We got to the 11th grade and we all got stronger. We all got a little more athletic. And we all just kept working. In our last summer, we was the best team, including the Soldiers. And nobody on that team went Division I. Except me and one other guy. So if two of us went to a Division I school, everybody else went to D3, NAIA, some didn't go anywhere. and we better than it, and we finished a summer and beat, and it's better than the team where everybody went high major.
Right.
That's when I was like, man, we had real love for each other. We went on the road, like, they took our phones away, and we spent time together, and we cared about winning for our next guy. And we wouldn't take nobody over our next guy. And because we had that, we was able to beat a lot of people. And that's why I feel the way I feel about whatever team I have, and this is what we gonna get it done with. And I feel like we can get it done. It ain't my job to complain about, I need this, or I need that, or I didn't get it. Like, of course, if I don't make the All-Star team and I average 27 points a game, or last year I averaged 25 points a game, I'm gonna say, that's BS. You know, it's not right. But, you know, I'm happy that it happened, because now I'm to the point to where I really don't need that validation. And I really understand that, you know, I'm much more than that. And people know it, and people know that what happens is not right. And, you know, the politics has never been on my side. So now I'm to the point where I just embrace that as, you know, that's my story. It's just not meant for me to always have things work out in my way. And I just got to continue to rise above it and continue to be who I am. And that's what I'm always doing.
Well, Damian, appreciate you taking the time and getting this done with us. We're going to have BJ submit something for Four Bars Friday, and we need to have you listen to it, and hope you come back on with us and you can break down exactly what his skills are.
So, cool. Let's do it.
I hope you enjoyed all that with Dame Dollar. Keep in mind, you can listen to us on iTunes. You can subscribe to it, and please leave a message, rate and review what we're doing. Let us know how we're doing. You can also get our podcast and all the other material that we have going on, written and otherwise, at bjandbuecher.com. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at bjandbuecher. BJ, really had a good time. Let's do it again next week.
See you next week, buddy.